This is March 31st, 2015. I'm Senator Mia Costello, and with me this afternoon is Senator Ellis, and we'll expect Senator Meyer to be running a few moments late, and the other members of the committee. I want to say thank you to the recording secretary, Carrie, and the LIO operator, Cody. Really appreciate your help. Couldn't do this without you. We are going to be adjourning today at 3 o'clock as usual, and I apologize for the lateness of the start, but we were on the floor this afternoon. And we are welcomed also by Senator Stevens. Welcome. So the intent today is we have four governor's appointments on the agenda, and then we have two bills, Senate Bill 76 and Senate Bill 77, and we will get as far as we can in the time that we have. And then we will continue the meeting on next meeting when we have time for that. So, and welcome Senator Giesel, Vice Chair Senator Giesel. So the procedure for the board appointments is that we will have all of the appointees present comments to the committee. We'll take committee questions. Any public testimony, then I'll close the public testimony, and we will forward the names for a joint session for consideration if that's the will of the committee. So with that, members have the board rosters, the fact sheets, and appointee resumes in your binders. And with that, we will begin with the Real Estate Commission, and the appointee is Cynthia Cartledge of Anchorage. For a public seat, this is one of seven seats. And Cynthia, are you online?
I am, Senator Costello.
Welcome. And I see that you were appointed in November 20th of 2013, and that this is a reappointment that would expire on March 1st of 2019. And with that, please introduce yourself for the committee and let us know your interest in serving on the Real Estate Commission.
Sure, I'd be happy to, Senator. My name is Cynthia Cartledge, for the record. I am a practicing attorney in Anchorage, Alaska. I have been with my existing firm since 1988, so for a few years. As the chair mentioned, I was appointed to the board in November 2013. And I have learned a lot since that time. It has been engaging and challenging. It's been a good experience, and I certainly appreciate the fact that there are two public members on the board, myself and another public member, and I hope that we add to the mix, and I think we both enjoy our time on the board, and I believe we add value to the board. And with that said, Senator, I'd just be happy to answer any questions that you or others may have with regards to the appointment or to my qualifications generally.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Cartledge. Are there any questions from committee members? I actually have a question, and I ask this essentially of everybody who's being appointed. And what do you see as the main challenges moving forward with your with the Real Estate Commission?
I think, at least from my perspective, the challenges stem from the statutes and regulations which currently govern, if you will, the profession, and the changing of the profession, if you will, sort of the evolution of the profession, and I think we're going to have to make a number of changes. We've been working diligently on consumer disclosure information to try to better advise, if you will, the general public of what it is that real estate agents do for them, what the responsibilities are, etc. I just think keeping in sync with what's happening in the industry, the evolution in the industry, and making sure that that actually is covered by statute and regulations.
Great. Well, thank you very much. With that, I will open public testimony on the appointment of Cynthia Cartledge to the Real Estate Commission. Is there anyone here in Juneau who is interested in testifying? Okay. Seeing no one. Is there anyone online who is interested in providing public testimony? Okay. Seeing none, public testimony is closed. Thank you, Ms. Cartledge. I appreciate you making yourself available and for your patience as we got off the floor, and also for your interest in continuing to serve the state and on this important commission.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Next, before the committee is the nominee for the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board. And welcome, Tom Manning. Are you online?
Yes, I'm online.
Welcome, Mr. Manning. I enjoyed, I guess serving isn't the right word, but working as a teacher when you were at the high school. And, you know, I know you've got a large family, and, you know, your service to the state is certainly appreciated. And do you want to introduce yourself to the committee and express your interest in serving on the ABC board?
You bet. So my name's Tom Manning, and I'm just retired from teaching. As Mia said, I was teacher at JD High and Sitka and elsewhere for the last 30 years, but also I've been a partner with my brother in liquor store in Juneau for almost 28 years or something like that. And before that, I had a couple of interest in a couple other things, restaurant and a bar. And so I've had experience both in the alcohol beverage industry and as an educator for 30 plus years. So my interest is, changes in Title IV and whatnot, so I've been involved with that a little bit through the CHAR organization. And as just retiring from teaching, I have some ideas and some concerns about maybe the ways that education can become a component, especially with dealing with underage drinking and things like that. So one of my stronger interests in serving on the board.
Great. Well, thank you very much. Are there any questions of committee members?
Not right now, no.
Mr. Manning, what do you see as the main challenge of the ABC board?
Well, I understand right now there's a lot of things going on with the possible addition of marijuana as being a controlled substance through the board, and I don't know exactly how that's going to play out, but again, to me, I've had a lot of experience in terms of being a business owner, seeing how things have been dealt with in terms of underage drinking and kids that continue to, trying to either enter establishments or I think there could be some other things that could happen. I'd love to have some input in that. Okay. An education process that maybe would go beyond just, you know, there's been conversation about fines and things like that. So okay. I think there's some possibilities for some new ideas.
Thank you. I will open public testimony on Mr. Manning's nomination to the ABC board. And so with that, is there anyone here in Juneau who would like to provide public testimony? Seeing none. Is there anyone online that would like to provide public testimony? Okay. With that, public testimony is closed. Thank you, Mr. Manning. And the intent, of course, with the will of the committee, is to forward your name before the full body.
Thank you very much.
Next is Mr. Stephen McAlpine of the RCA, the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. And Mr. McAlpine, are you online?
I am, Senator.
Thank you. So would you like to provide brief comments to the committee related to your interest in serving as a commissioner of the RCA?
Thank you. And I will try to keep it brief. I am a 40-year resident of Alaska. In real life, I'm an attorney. But for the 8 years that I served in public office, I have been an active member of the Alaska State Bar and have maintained my bar membership for over 40 years, or actually 35 years. Since joining the commission, I've had the opportunity to read over 1,200 pages of material, sat in numerous adjudications, and neither watched or participated in three separate hearings. I've now attended two training sessions and am actively involved in the preparation for a major rate case, which will commence on April 6th. And with that, I would entertain any questions that you might have.
Okay. Are there any questions of committee members? Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Attending Governor McAlpine. Could you just help us understand how much of a how much time does this position take? Is it going to be a full-time job for you or a part-time? How does that work?
Well, thus far, Senator, thank you for the question. Through the chair, thus far it has been far more than full-time. I was fortunate in that my spouse was out of town for 3 weeks during March, and it afforded me the opportunity to go to work early and to stay late. I was assured by a couple of members of the commission as well as staff that my first couple of weeks at the commission were extraordinary as opposed to ordinary in that the amount of time and work involved, I've been told, was out of the ordinary. It's not to be expected that I will be put to the task as long as I have thus far, but it is certainly a great intellectual experience. I've learned a lot. I enjoy working with the current commissioners and the staff. I recognize that there are some challenges there. I think that they have a difficult time both attracting and keeping engineers, and I suspect that may be because of the pay level at the commission vis-a-vis private industry. But like I said, it is definitely a full-time job for virtually everyone involved.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor, and just want to express my appreciation for your continued and long-time dedication to the state.
Thank you.
Senator Kiesel?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess it's not really a question. I appreciate Senator Stevens' question. As I'm looking at the fact sheet, the members of the RCA are actually salaried positions at range 27, so I would expect it to be somewhat of a full-time job, actually. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Kiesel. And Lieutenant Governor McAlpine, I was curious, as former Lieutenant Governor, are there upcoming regulatory issues or issues that you think the legislature should anticipate or be aware of?
Well, there, one of the things that I think should be apparent to the legislature as a whole is that despite the fact that we have multiple utilities in the state of Alaska that are spread out over, as you're certainly very aware, considerable distances vis-a-vis what goes on in the lower 48, we are but one small utility given the population that we serve. And so the fact that there are going to be continuing capital investments required that in some other places would seem to be out of the realm of ordinary, that we have to do that simply because we're not just a rate-making body. We also have to ensure sustainability and reliability at the utilities. I think there's going to be some challenges given the fact that the EPA is looking at clean air involvement, and my concern, of course, would be that one of our utilities would be adversely affected by that, and we certainly, and I'm certain that you and the legislature are also very aware of this, make our feelings known to the EPA, and in terms of transmission and the fact that it's done by, again, multiple utilities. Of course, we've been charged by the legislature to look at a single provider for transmission, and we are in the process of taking input from various entities and individuals as to the propriety of that and what cost savings might be involved in that, and to prepare a report back to you on that issue. And I suppose I know that you have severe time constraints, but we could probably spend a considerable part of a day talking about those types of issues.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to take the opportunity to say hello to Lieutenant Governor McAlpine and to thank him for his willingness to continue service on the RCA. It's an important position, and he and his wife Dana are former constituents of mine. They haven't moved, to my knowledge, but my district changed with reapportionment, so I'm sorry not to be able to continue representing them in the state Senate. I can attest for the record to Mr. McAlpine's intellect, his knowledge of the state of Alaska, of the state government, of the issues relevant to the RCA, and to his strong work ethic. So I think we will get our money's worth. It is a full-time position. We will get our money's worth. And Stephen, I just really appreciate your willingness to continue serving on the RCA. So thank you.
Thank you for the kind words, Senator.
Thank you, Senator Ellis. So this concludes the committee's consideration of the governor's appointees to state boards and commissions. And I want to thank members for reviewing the resumes and, you know, for asking questions and providing thanks to those who are serving. And I do want to thank all of the nominees for your time and willingness to serve the state of Alaska. We have numerous boards and commissions that deal with many issues, and it helps keep government running, and especially want to thank those public members on those commissions. So with that, in accordance with AS 3905080, the Labor and Commerce Committee reviewed the following and recommends the appointments be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. Is there any objection? Seeing none, we'll take it at ease to sign the paperwork, and following this we'll have the Commerce Commissioner appointee, Mr. Chris Laddick, next. Welcome back to order for the Labor and Commerce Committee. And before us this afternoon, we have the governor's nominee for the Commissioner of the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, Mr. Chris Laddick. We'll basically take some comments from you and introduce yourself to the committee. And as the previous appointees, we opened it up for questions from the committee members. We'll take any public testimony and then look for the will of the committee. So with that.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Chris Laddick. I am the designee for Commissioner of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. I've been in the state as a city manager for some 25 years, starting in Galena and then Dillingham, and most recently on Alaska for the last 14 years. I started out as a pretty green public works director and city manager in Galena, and learned a lot from DCRA. That's where I learned, basically got my start with those folks. I'd never read a contract before in my life, never talked to an attorney, and worked my way up from there. And I went to Dillingham in 94, and I'd like to introduce my friend here, Chris Napoli, who is the former mayor of Dillingham, and somebody, he and I went through a lot of battles together there. When I got to Dillingham, there was it was 6 months until we didn't have enough money to make payroll. So I'm familiar with belt tightening and beyond. I've done a lot of projects. I've done a lot of initiatives, as you can see from my resume. I'm drawn to a projects type individual, and I like to get things done. And I think my record in Alaska shows that. So with that, I'd open it up to questions.
Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Madam Chair. I've known Chris for a long time. It seems to me it's natural that that a city manager would be considered for this position. Have there been others that have moved from city manager into the commissioner position, or are you the very first, you know?
I don't know. I'm not sure about that.
I think you've got a lot. You bring a lot to the table in this business, and I appreciate your service over the years.
Thank you, sir.
Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Laddick. I believe you would be then the designee for the AGDC board.
Yes.
Is that
correct?
Okay. Great. How do you feel about that? Have you been keeping up on that project, gas pipeline?
Well, I haven't done my first meeting yet. I've been studying as much as possible. I really look forward to it. I think it's an important project for the state, and we need to figure out how to get it done.
Senator Giesel.
So follow up on that. So Mr. Laddick, in Alaska, I know we had conversation about their source of energy. And actually, I think you were considering how natural gas might get there.
We have worked on that quite a bit. And I think it's a natural evolution because, as you know, Shell is getting ready to drill in the Arctic. They use Unalaska as a staging area. Some of those ships are LNG powered when they get up into the Arctic. And so that began, you know, the mayor, Shirley Marquardt, and I thought, well, we ought to start exploring this and see what's out there. And the issue right now is the supply, a guaranteed supply, and how to get it to Unalaska. But I think I've done quite a bit of study on that, and I think it's feasible with the right cost for the energy and that supply chain, figuring out that supply chain. I think you got to go beyond the ISO tanks and get to long-term storage.
Very good. And Senate Bill 138, which established the AK LNG project, actually provides for distributing the gas beyond the main corridor of the state. So that's great. Another question, Madam Chair. You state here, I'm very familiar with NEPA and ESA issues. Could you elaborate a bit more on that, just so the committee knows?
Senator Giesel, through the chair, there is a lot of environmental scrutiny in Unalaska on projects. So I've dealt pretty extensively with EPA, DOJ, and the Department of Fish and Wildlife on ESA issues, and of course the permit for the wastewater treatment plant that we were eventually sued for $150 million by the Department of Justice. And so they had all those mixture of Endangered Species Act issues. So I'm very familiar with those and dealing with the federal agencies on such.
Very good. Thank you. I thank you for being willing to serve in this commissioner position.
Thank you,
Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Ellis, do you have any questions? Okay. I had overseen the department's budget as a member in the other body. I'm just curious if you could talk about just your familiarity with the department and what you see moving forward in terms of opportunities for economic diversification and economic development for the state.
Well, this is my 11th day on the job. And I left Unalaska on March 13th and immediately started on Monday. Mm-hmm. So I've been digging in as much as possible. So if I understand your question is how are we going to do more with less or?
Not necessarily. I mean, just in terms of, you know, what is your vision for diversifying our economy?
Well, I can tell you if you have cheap electricity, you have the building blocks for diversifying your economy. If you don't have that, I think it's very difficult. So that would be my vision, is try to figure out a way to get the gas line done or look at other alternatives. I mean, there's a whole suite of measures I think you would take that I know that the Department of Economic Development is working on as well, with trying to help existing businesses to grow, through enticing people from outside to come into the state, some of those types of details that are being worked out right now.
And
Madam Chair.
Oh, yes, Senator Stevens.
Just to carry on with that a little bit, when the governor spoke to the combined Senate and House at the beginning of session, he talked about value added. Could you give some explanation of how we might actually approach value added in the products we produce here in Alaska?
Well, if we're talking about seafood, there's a lot.
What I was really talking about.
There's a lot of things that we do value added right now, and people talk about the fact that our seafood products are the amount that's going to Japan is going down, but actually a lot of it is going to China for secondary processing and then ends up back in Japan. I think that the seafood companies do a great deal with value added, and I know that ASME has done a great job with working on that issue as well.
it's an odd way to do business, and we talk about the experts that we have, and a lot of those experts are in seafood just going in bulk to China and being reprocessed there. And I'm just wondering, are there options that we could, in fact, do that processing here in Alaska and have full benefit from the products we produce in seafood?
I think that's worth looking into, but I know that right now those costs in China are lower, so we would have to figure out how to lower our costs, which gets you back to the electricity and some of the overhead costs for doing a seafood plant. I think they tried that several years ago in Anchorage, and I'm not sure. I didn't see their business plan, but I know it failed.
Miserably.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm aware that as commissioner, you are tasked with serving on numerous boards and commissions, and that this job alone could probably consume your time full time. And could you talk about some of the boards and corporations that you will be sitting, that you serve on, and what you think your role can be, and then do you think that you will be, where possible, sending a designee, or is it your plan to attend and be involved personally, and how are you going to manage some of the challenges of your job with regards to that demand on your time?
It is Madam Chair, it is impossible to go to every one of them and still keep the department going, so we have it split up between my deputy, Fred Parody, and John Bittner. I'm going to be on the railroad board. I'm on the Alaska Marine Pilot Board, AGDC. I think Fred does the ADA board, and I just blanked on the rest of them, but I know there's a whole bunch of them. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I don't have them memorized yet.
I know the fact that your bags are probably not unpacked yet. So I think that the committee is just appreciative of anyone willing to serve in such an important capacity. As your role on AGDC, have you had any time to look at some of the progress that the legislature's made so far in terms of what we've put in statute in terms of the plan and the plan moving forward?
Yes, Madam Chair. I followed the project pretty closely in what I could get in the newspapers, and right now I'm going through minutes and the board bylaws, et cetera, trying to get up to speed on what has transpired. So I'm aware of the project.
Okay. And then I just have one final question, and that is, why do you think the governor is seeking to have you fill this position? You know, what talents and skills do you bring to the position?
Well, I wasn't looking for a job when I got called, and he had come out to Unalaska, I believe, in the end of October, early November, and I just took him around and showed him the town and what we had accomplished. Never talked to anybody about a job with the governor or his cabinet, and I guess he liked what he saw in Unalaska. And it's a great community, and it's one of the best jobs I've ever had.
I have never been to Unalaska, so if I did go there, what would I see?
What would you see? A very vibrant community. It's a working community. There's no unemployment. The city council likes to do things right. You see a very vibrant school system that scores high every year in the testing, usually in the top three. You would see a very friendly community and a very multicultural community.
Thank you. Any further questions? Right. Thank you very much. With that, I am going to open public testimony. Is there anyone here in Juneau who is interested in providing any public testimony? Okay. Seeing no one. Is there anyone online that is interested in testifying? Okay. With that, I will close public testimony. And with that, in accordance with AS 3905080, the Labor and Commerce Committee reviewed the following and recommends the appointments be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. Any objection from committee members? Okay, seeing none, thank you very much. We will be forwarding your name, and we will take an at ease to sign the paperwork. Welcome back to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, and I'm happy to say that we will be getting to Senate Bill 76 because I know there are people who came from out of town and certainly want to respect everyone's time to make the process work as efficiently as possible. So with that, I wanted to welcome Genevieve Watusek to the committee, your staff to Senator McGuire. And with that, you will be introducing the bill. Okay, thank you.
Yes, for the record, thank you, Chair. Genevieve Watusek, staff to Senator McGuire. She apologizes. She's in another meeting at this time. So I'd like to go over the initial view of the bill and then bring up Jeff Pickett, who's our attorney on staff, to go over the legal issues, if there are any, and the sectional, just to describe. And then also, if there are any questions on the original case, we have Howard Trickey, who's in the audience, to go over any of those things. So under AS08.88.396, a real estate licensee acting before January 1, 2005, was authorized to act as both a buyer's and a seller's representative, but only after the licensee informed both the buyer and the seller of his or her dual agency and obtained written consent from both. This statute, as originally enacted, did not specify remedies if a real estate licensee or the agent violated its provisions. In 2003, the Alaska Legislature acted to correct the remedies omission. The legislature was concerned that without specifying its intent with respect to appropriate remedies in the case of a violation, a court might feel compelled to impose the potentially business-ending remedy of forfeiture of real estate sales commissions.
Excuse me, we've been welcomed by Senate President Kevin Meyer. Welcome.
The legislature at the time was particularly concerned that this could occur in cases even where the plaintiffs had suffered no actual damages. So in order to address this concern, the legislature enacted House Bill 257 in 2003, legislation that fixed the ambiguity by retroactively limiting the remedy for violations of Alaska Statute 8.88.396 to actual damages. HB 257 passed, the legislature was signing the law, and despite challenges before two different Superior Court judges, has been found constitutional. The Alaska Supreme Court has twice declined to review the case, though. Despite the enactment of House Bill 257 and despite the finding of constitutionality by the Superior Court, questions have arisen regarding the legislature's intent in its amending AS08.88.396. So in 2003, by specifying and clarifying that the actual damages limitations of a 2003 amendment applies to all claims that are based upon or arise out of allegations of violations of AS8.88.396. So this clarification is necessarily retroactive because the legislature enacted House Bill 29 in 2004, which, among other things, specified 8.88.396 ceased to apply to real estate transactions as of 1-1-2005. And the legislature desires to ensure that any claims predating the 2005 effective date of House Bill 29 are appropriately subject to the intent of its 2003 enactment of House Bill 257. And that's the general overview of the bill. And if you'd like Jeff to come up to talk about the sectional, he may.
That would be, I think, advisable. Thank you. Mm-hmm. If you could join us.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jeff Pickett, and as Ms. Watusek said, I am staff counsel with the Judiciary Committee. I'm happy.
Welcome, by the way.
Thank you.
You know, you were introduced on the Senate floor the other day, and I realized I went to elementary school with your wife.
Yes.
Yes, and we had competitions in our classroom to do math problems, and you'd stand up if you got the answer first, and I was always competing with Tammy. So anyway, welcome.
Thank you. So, Madam Chair and Senators, Section 1 of the bill amends the wording of AS08.88.396 subsection E, which for real estate transactions that occurred before January 1st, 2005, limits civil litigation and other remedies for the failure of a real estate licensee to comply with certain requirements concerning relationships with and disclosures to buyers and sellers. Section 2 provides that the bill applies to a real estate transaction that occurred on or before the bill's effective date and to a court action related to such a transaction pending on the effective date of the bill. Section 3 makes Section 1 of the bill retroactive to January 1, 1991, and Section 4 makes the bill effective immediately.
Okay. Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Madam Chair, so how do you make a law retroactive if there's a case going on?
Senator Giesel, through the chair, that's a great question, and there is case law on that, that both at the U.S. Supreme Court level and the Alaska State Supreme Court, which permits that so long as there's no final judgment, a law can be retroactive that impacts on a pending case. The U.S. Supreme Court has found that this does not violate the separation of powers, and as surprising as it might seem, it has been found constitutional. That type of action has been found constitutional.
Senator Giesel.
So, follow-up, Madam Chair. So, there's only been one case? I mean, I guess if the cases have been settled, then this wouldn't apply, or have there ever been cases?
Senator Giesel, through the chair, in terms of the precedent for retroactivity, or in terms of the specific case that this bill is going to impact on?
In terms of the specific case this will impact on.
Right. So, yes, there's one case that has continued on through a tortured history, it seems. It was filed in 2002. In 2003, the legislature amended a statute that and provided for remedies in the statute that that had not been provided for earlier, if that makes any sense. And so at that point, the thought was that was probably litigation ending amendment, just because what the amendment did was said that that the only remedies available are actual damages. And so because the plaintiffs have thought to have been pursuing a forfeiture of commissions, possibly punitive damages, the feeling was that probably would end the case, but it didn't. And so that amendment happened in 2003. In 2005, the litigants had continued their motion practice. In 2005, Judge Hensley ruled that in fact the amendments made to 08, 88, 396, sorry, I cannot read with these glasses on, 396, that was in fact a constitutional amendment, and that it in fact required or limited the remedies only to actual damages. 2007, there was additional motion practice. 2007, another judge basically affirmed or confirmed what Judge Hensley had found in his 2005 order. In 2010, another judge there was convinced to follow a slightly different theory of the case and certified a class on the basis of a common law sort of theory. What the plaintiffs are saying now in 2010 is that there's a common law duty among real estate licensees to disclose if they're acting in a dual role, and that because it's a common law duty and not a statutory duty, the remedy of forfeiture is now potentially out there again. This bill makes clear that remedy of forfeiture is not available to any action arising out of a dual agency or failure to disclose dual agency.
Further questions? Okay. Mr. Pickett, in the materials that I read, it mentioned that the current law is, I think the word was vague, unclear as to when a real estate agent has to disclose that they're dual representing. And is that the crux of this? And if not, could you just tell us, you know, we read bills and we go through sectionals, but they don't really tell us the story that's, you know, in an understandable manner. And I was hoping that you could provide for the committee, you know, shine a light on that. What really is at issue here?
Madam Chair, what is at issue here is what penalties might be imposed on a real estate licensee who does not disclose or did not disclose at the time of his or her representation of a client the fact that they were acting in a dual capacity.
Okay.
Now, my understanding is back in the day, before 2002, is that many of the real estate agents or licensees were not very excited about the requirement of disclosure. There was no provision for a remedy or a punishment of any kind, and so they didn't really comply with it. After this gentleman, Eldon Tanner, brought a lawsuit in 2002, I think there was a lot of sort of oral disclosures or backdated disclosures. The purpose of that was, in conjunction with the actual damages limit on remedies, was to provide that kind of notice and to, in situations where nobody was harmed by the lack of notice, to sort of remove from, the threat of forfeiture of commissions, remove that threat from real estate agents who didn't disclose but also didn't harm anybody by their failure to disclose, if that makes any sense.
And so you mentioned when they're not disclosing at the time of representation, I mean, is that in the law, it never said, I mean, the legislature never said when that disclosure had to occur, and that's part of the vagary?
Madam Chair, that's a good question, and I don't know in 1999, 2000, 2001, and 2002 exactly what the timing requirements were. If I had to guess, I would guess it was at the time of the representation, but I would have to research that and get back to you.
Okay, that's fine. And the bill has been described to me as a simple bill, which I'm always hesitant to myself call any bill simple because I don't think any bill really is. And so can you, on page 1, line 6, I've been told that this clarification helps provide the intent of the legislature. So we're going from in a civil action for the failure of a licensee to comply with the provisions of the section 2 in a civil action arising out of. So can you tell me what is the significance between moving from for to arising out of?
Madam Chair, the significance is the broad meaning of the term arising out of. So whereas originally, I think the legislature, when it acted in 2003 to amend 0888-396, it believed it was addressing any claim that might occur where there was a non-disclosure of dual agency. But this rather creative argument came up in 2010 where the plaintiff said, well, what we've been working on before, or what Judge Hensley's 2005 decision relied on before, was a violation of the statute. And we're talking now about a violation of a common law duty. In 2010, that was the argument that was made. So this language fixes that, I guess you would say, ambiguity by using the very broad arising out of language. So any claim arising out of the failure to, disclose dual agency is now comes within the remedy restriction of actual damages.
Right. And if the courts are having trouble figuring out the intent of the legislature, how does this bill then succeed where the courts have not been able to succeed?
Madam Chair, another great question. I think there probably is no way to write retroactive legislation like this that doesn't invite some additional litigation. That's just my own personal view. I do think the arising out of language is broad enough to encompass common law claims rather. But it will be up to a judge and perhaps to decide, perhaps it's the state Supreme Court to decide whether it is in fact that broad.
That's why often I feel that we get on record our comments, because we're told that the courts do go back and read them, and so the intent of the legislature is created in the public record. And so that was a curiosity to me, why it was so difficult and just it's in line with the question of why is this, you know, why is this bill required? But with that, I do want to actually go to public testimony today because we will, I know we have members of the administration here, but we'll probably have you back. Senator Ellis, did you have a question?
Madam Chair, if he's prepared to do so, could the committee entertain Mr. Howard Trickey to...
I do have him under the public testimony, so
I think he
yes.
can take us through the Bonnie Maynard situation that brought us to the 03 legislation.
And that was my intent, was before we adjourned okay. to get him.
Because I'm hoping
before.
To hear it described in layman's terms.
Yes, and that
the
was my intent.
Attorneys among us.
Yes. Well, we can go work on that in the evening hours, right? with that, I am going to open public testimony on the bill. And first, I have on the list here... I'm sorry, Mr. Howard Trickey. So with that, Mr. Trickey? And I think you've heard your marching orders from Senator Ellis, and I think those are shared okay. amongst the committee members.
Well, and thank you, Madam Chairman, and committee members. I thought that what I could do is just simply, I think because your questions were very good and focused, I would try to go back over and answer very quickly your questions, but to address Senator Ellis's concern, and this is a little bit deja vu all over again for me because in 2003 I was here testifying before members of this committee who were serving in the legislature at the time about the reason why it was necessary for the real estate industry to limit damages for the statutory violation to actual damages, and without revisiting all of that with you. The industry at the time was exposed to a potential exposure of about $70 million for forfeiture and disgorgement of all commissions that may have been earned over a three-year period of time by people in the industry who were involved in dual agency transactions. And the law at the time permitted and authorized dual agency transactions once there was a disclosure and written consent obtained. And the industry practice at the time was to make the written disclosures and to make oral disclosures at the time properties were being showed to a potential buyer when they had a listing from a seller. And as you may be aware in that industry, the industry operates off of MLS forms that are developed and written by attorneys for the industry. So there were written disclosure forms that disclose I'm an agent for the seller or I'm an agent for this buyer, and then written consents were obtained both from the buyer and both from the seller. It was a very much a buyer's market in that time frame, so properties did not stay on the market long. When someone showed up at a residence that was being shown by a listing agent, oftentimes people were prepared to and did make offers right on the spot. So what occurred here and what the violation was that's being asserted in this lawsuit is really I've always characterized it as a technical timing violation because the industry made the disclosures and they obtained the written consent, and in this case everyone received a written disclosure of the dual agency and obtained the written consent. There was confusion in the industry because the prior statutory scheme did not specify the timing of when those disclosures were made. So this is really a technical violation that was being exploited in this lawsuit, and the threat to the industry was that you would be required to forfeit all commissions earned because of that minor timing problem, but everyone got the disclosures and the consents were obtained in the course of the transaction and in time for people to make a decision to either withdraw from the transaction or seek an independent agent for themselves if they wanted that protection. So this was really a no harm, no foul situation. And but when you can aggregate claims through a class action so that, you know, one disgruntled or two disgruntled people can represent, in the case I've been defending, 3,500 different transactions and 7,000 people, you then create bet the farm kind of case that puts the entire business at risk because of the size of the claim that's being asserted. In this case, the claim that's being asserted is for $30 million. So there is no business that's the size of a small real estate firm that could withstand that. So that's what led to the legislature addressing in 2003, limiting what the remedy was for a violation of the statute to actual damages. So was that threat to the industry, the economic impact of it, the fact that the industry wouldn't even be able to get insurance for that kind of a harm is what led the original legislature to act to limit the remedies by limiting them to actual damages. So fast forward to why is this back here in front of you to address your question of the clarification, the need for the clarification. There was a judicial decision that, quite frankly, was an attempt to work around this statute. The judge didn't like the statute and came up with a creative decision that allows the use of the statutory violations even now to support the remedy of a breach of a common law duty, but provable only by virtue of identifying the problems that the legislature originally addressed in House Bill 257, which simply had to do with the timing of the written disclosures and the timing of obtaining the written consent. So that's why we're seeking this clarification. And the reason we are using the language of arising out of is that it's broader than the original statute, but it's broad only in limiting remedies for the violation of the statute to actual damages. It doesn't take away any other existing claim. It doesn't even take away a claim for violating the statute. It's just that the remedy for violating the statute is just actual damages. And to follow up on one of through the chair, if I could, one of Senator Giesel's questions, the reason it's constitutional is that there isn't any contractual right to the remedy of punitive damages or to the remedy of forfeiture. And there isn't any vested right because there's no final judgment in this case. And the Alaska Supreme Court has ruled that in other settings and other contexts. Probably the one that people would be most familiar with is when tort reform was first passed by the legislature that capped punitive damages and capped damages in different ways. There were pending lawsuits that applied to, and the Alaska Supreme Court ruled that that was not an improper retroactive application unconstitutionally of a law because no one had a judgment entitling them to damages. And the whole remedy of punitive damages and forfeiture is a matter of public policy for the legislature to address, not the courts. If the legislature wants to limit that kind of civil penalty, it can, because it's a penalty. It's not a remedy for any actual damages that someone has suffered. So those, I know you are limited in time, so those are my comments. I think are responsive to the questions that you have raised. If you have any that I have not addressed, I'd be happy to. The bill is supported by the industry because there still are potential claims that could be pursued under the circumstances of how our courts apply statute of limitations law.
Thank you for that, and I do want to get to Errol Champion before we adjourn at 3, but I do have one brief question. Sure. Are you being paid by the defendants, or are you here as a member of the public?
I am representing my clients. I've been representing them since the lawsuit was filed, so yes, I'm here today being paid for my time to address the issues before you. Yes, okay. But it's part of the representation I've undertaken years ago.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
With that, I'd like to invite Errol Champion with the Alaska Association of Realtors. Welcome.
Thank you, Senator Costello, members of the committee. My name is Errol Champion, and I live here in Juneau, but I serve as chair of the Legislative Issues Committee for Alaska Association of Realtors. Many of you have seen me many times here testifying on different issues. Time is of the essence. I submitted a letter to you yesterday that's in your packet. Alaska Association of Realtors is in total support of the adoption of Senate Bill 76, and we've stated our reasons in the letter, so I will be quiet.
Are there any questions of Mr. Champion? With that, thank you very much. I appreciate that. And we do, we have run out of time today, so I'm going to keep public testimony open on this bill. And then, members, we will be hearing it again on at our next committee meeting. So I want to thank the sponsor for having this before us and apologize for not getting to Senate Bill 77, but we will also move that to our next meeting. So with that, the committee is adjourned.